This is the start of the audio lecture for the first part of section 4. There's only one introductory video for section 4, and that's at the beginning of this part, but there will be a second file with the second audio lecture. This lecture is concerned initially with the experiential, the experience of praying, and this will seek not to cover the whole territory, but just to raise some very interesting issues that we will then follow up and put into perspective in the second part. Now I want to begin with perhaps the hardest one, a contemporary postmodern prayer. I'd like you to look at the text. It's from the philosopher and poet George Santayana. Prayer, though it accomplishes nothing material, constitutes something spiritual. It will not bring rain, but until rain comes, it may cultivate hope and resignation, and may prepare the heart for any issue, opening up a vista in which human prosperity will appear in its conditioned existence and conditional value. A candle wasting itself before an image will prevent no misfortune, but it may bear witness to some silent hope or relieve some sorrow by expressing it. It may soften a little the bitter sense of impotence which would consume a mind aware of physical dependence, but not of spiritual dominion. Well, you might have your own initial reactions to this, but what I wanted to point out that even though this was written before the so-called postmodern age, it seems to take into account the secularization and the great level of uncertainty in spiritual and personal knowing that is said to be a feature of cultural postmodernity. And in an age that may tend to dismiss prayer as superstitious and irrelevant, Santayana points out to some of the psychological function of prayer that can be very helpful for individuals, and he points out, don't be too ready to dismiss prayer. He points out that it's likely that people today don't expect God to intervene all the time and work miracles. This is not the realistic situation. But until something happens, it may be sensible and meaningful and helpful for someone to light a candle and pray for rain until it comes. Or when thinking of someone in need, to light a candle and think about them. So that even people who may not be believers will say, we will think of you in our prayers, or we will be with you at this difficult time. And this was interesting in a comment made by Julia Gillard when Prime Minister. She is not a religious believer, but she said when there was some particular problem or disaster that our thoughts and prayers will be with you. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. It's consistent to use that language to express our hopes and our concerns for people. And this is one of the main functions of prayer. It's not just asking for what you need all the time. It can be a physical and a symbolic expression of care, compassion, identification with people, empathy and sympathy. And so in an age that seems to be dismissing religion, I think a postmodern prayer like this highlights something of the personal and spiritual function of what it means to acknowledge that we are conditioned in our existence. We don't have power over everything. We have very limited freedom. And in many ways, we have to just deal with the cards that have been given to us at the start of life. And I think that that is very consistent with a Christian view of prayer. One of the important issues that this will raise that we'll take up in part two is the need to give attention to the meaning and the function of prayer. In these days where religion is not very prominent in the meaning system of many people, we need to highlight its meaning and its significance and its psychological function, and certainly that for prayer. Then an example of a traditional hymn, just to point out that one of the pedagogies we'll note in section 2 would be that children in their study of prayer need to see how prayer has evolved, how you have prayers in the Hebrew scriptures, in the Christian scriptures, in Christian history and so on, and to see how they've evolved and changed and how the emphases have been different from age to age with different slants and interests. The example there is the popular hymn often sung at communion time and Catholic masses in the 1950s, Soul of My Saviour. The next section takes the words of that traditional prayer, which, if you read them, are very sentimental. When those of us who sang these hymns in the 1950s did so, it was often just the emotional feeling and the sense of emotional belonging that it promoted. Nobody really thought about the words, "Deep in thy wounds, Lord, hide and shelter me, bathe me in the blood flowing from thy side." It's almost, if you look at it analytically at the text, it's like a Buffy the Vampire song. But that was not what people concentrated on at the time. It was all about the emotional sense of belonging. And so that is important, and it is just important today to be able to have hymns and songs that have this function of being a ritual of belonging, an emotional feeling of belonging. But there's a contrast there between that traditional prayer and an example of one that you might say is typical of this level of uncertainty that is there in most people today about whether or not there is God and whether God hears them. So this is an example of such a prayer. "God, I'm not sure if you're there. I'm not even sure if you can hear me. But if you can, I sure could do with a bit of help right now. I hope that there is some meaning and purpose to life. Perhaps you could help me learn better from my own experience and find some wisdom that can point me in the right direction. I don't know if Jesus is your son or not, or what that really means in any case, but he seems to me as divine as a human being could be. Could I find anyone better to show me what God is like in human terms?" And I think you can see there that the point that comes out from people praying like that is, even though they are unsure and cannot prove the existence of God or an afterlife, they can still pray with this natural level of doubt and uncertainty in their thinking. And this point has been well brought out by Pope Francis in his comments about faith, pointing out that uncertainty and doubts and insecurity are a natural part of what it means to be a believer. He pointed out that since the very first of the great heroes of the faith, like Moses and so on, they all had their doubts. Some of them even had arguments with God. We may well see, if we got our students to do a study of how hymns and prayers have evolved, they would see that there's been a change from the more emotional and sentimental in the 19th and 20th centuries towards prayers that are more theological, deep and more scriptural, as you get in lots of the prayers and hymns that have been composed in the second part of the 20th century and early 21st century. But then, of course, like good literature, like good poetry, some of these prayers cut across many centuries and still have a meaning and a relevance today. And this is the case for scriptural prayers like Psalm 22 and Psalm 139 that were put in the text earlier. And this also goes for the prayer of St. Francis, which is given there, "Lord, make me an instrument of your peace." The next section looks briefly at prayers in the Hebrew Bible and Christian scriptures. And Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd," is there. And also Psalm 139, the one about God's complete knowledge and care. You can have a look at both of those as examples of prayer. If you look up the text of the second to last paragraph of the psalm, you'll see that it gets stuck into the enemies of Israel and says, "God, I want you to slaughter the bad guys, and I hate them and don't want them to succeed." It's interesting that you get a touch of that in the prayers in the Hebrew Bible. I took that out, but if you're interested, you could look up, see what the original said. Next, we have an example of how scriptural prayer has morphed into its use in the liturgy. And there's that wonderful statement about God from Isaiah, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God of hosts. And then all the earth is filled with his glory. And we can see that that same quotation is taken up in the 21st chapter of the Gospel of Matthew. You know, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, Hosanna in the highest. And so that became incorporated into the Sanctus in the Mass before the consecration and so on. And just as an example of how this in itself can be given different cultural expressions, I'd like you to stop and listen to the Missa Luba, a Latin Mass from the early 1960s, sung by the Congolese singers, and this is the Sanctus from that Mass. You can readily get other parts of that Mass from YouTube if you wanted to listen to them, but this is an example of that one. And if you can see here that the tradition of African music and drums and singing and singing in parts and so on is taken on board even before Vatican II in a way of trying to make the liturgy more meaningful and relevant to the local culture. The next section we will have a look at is something about the way in which prayers might function within contemporary songs. Now, just to give you a couple of examples, I picked two from the Australian Scottish folk singer Eric Bogle and two from the British singer Cleo Lane. The first one is a song that became very famous. It's about World War I, Private Willie McBride, and Bogle here sings a song that is really a protest, that is really an expression of the exasperation and the sense of tragedy at war and what it does to people. So you can listen to the song while looking at the text, and this is also a pedagogical thing to keep in mind. We will note in part two that if you're going to use songs for prayers, and particularly songs that the students themselves can find and bring in, often you need the lyrics so that you can really think about and concentrate about what's being said. So it's sort of appeals in a multimodal fashion through the music and through the written lyrics that you can follow. The second song that I'd like you to stop this commentary and listen to, also by Eric Bogle, is about fathers. It could be something like a prayer, thinking about the possible opportunities that we have missed in honouring and relating to our mothers and fathers. And Bogle, of course, never got on with his father and then had the awful experience after his father's death of finding scraps of paper that his father had written in poetry form, expressing his angst and concern about how much he really wanted to be able to relate to his son but was never able to manage it. So it is it's a sad and moving song about the lost opportunity to really relate to parents. The next one I want you to have a look at is a song by Billy Joel, this version sung by Cleo Lane. It's all about self-esteem. The song is called I Love You Just the Way You Are. Don't worry about changing to try to impress me. It has this theme of be yourself. You can be loved and accepted as you are if you make great efforts to become somebody else or to become like what you think other people are thinking about you, and they're not thinking that at all. You get tied up in a sense of identity that is too dependent on your interpretation of the opinions and values of others rather than relying on your own personal resources. If you know yourself and can accept yourself with all your limitations and strengths, you don't have to go out of your way to prove yourself and try to be something else. And we could also note that this theme becomes very helpful in understanding personal identity, that an identity is a healthy one if you don't have to work too hard on. If it's something you have to revise every day and continually work on, then it's an identity that doesn't have enough resilience. It's too fickle, it's too readily changed by being dependent on the views of others. The healthy identity is one that's built primarily on self-understanding, on inner resources. And so I think you could see that a song like this taps into the emotions in and around the sense of identity, and how this may often be closely linked with our perceptions of what other people think of us. The other song by Cleo Lane that's linked in here that you can have a listen to, I have not provided the lyrics, but I think you will pick up the message. It's a song about avoiding the stress of fast-paced living in contemporary society, where the songwriter urges us to stop and smell the roses, enjoy the beauty that everywhere surrounds us, and don't get caught up in a frenetic sort of life, with which in the long run is not only not so meaningful but also damaging for us. Just for interest's sake, I've put in a song that is still very puzzling, one that was written back in the early 1960s. It's the song New Christ Cardiac Hero by Janis Ian, and I still am not quite sure what all of the images and metaphors mean, and so I'm still not quite sure what the song actually means fully, but it's an example of an obscure poem, contemporary, audacious, shocking sort of poem that young people today are often ready to have a look at and try to make sense of. So you can look at the lyrics and hear Janis Ian sing the song and come to your own conclusions about what it means, what issues it's trying to raise. I'm not sure, but it seems to me that there are a raft of different images and ideas and issues. One of them is the question of the relevance of the contemporary Christian church, and also the relevance of the perceptions and image of the Christ of faith. Who is he and what's he like? And calling these into question and challenging them to be more relevant and more meaningful for people today. Perhaps that famous comment by the main character in Catcher in the Rye, Holden Caulfield, who talks about the problem with religion is the Holy Joe language that the minister has when preaching homilies, that is like life on another planet, or like a hovercraft that doesn't really touch the real ground where people walk on. And it's this challenge for religion and also for the perceptions and the understandings of Jesus to be relevant and meaningful to today. Anyway, over to you, and to see what sense you can make of this problematic and puzzling song. Just as an example of the level of symbolism that can appear within popular music, I put in an interpretation of the various symbols in the song by the US singer Don McLean, American Pie, and what some people think are all of the images that he is referring to. He has never explained fully what he was trying to say in the song, but the most that he has said about it is that it taps into a diverse range of images and issues that were influential in life in the United States in the 50s, 60s and 70s. Now, the final part of this section 4.1 gives a couple of examples, four examples, of prayers that were selected by primary school pupils. They were like visuals that they wanted to present that for them was something like a contemporary prayer, or a prayer that touched on or tapped into important issues for them. The first one is the song Stand By Me. The amazing thing about it is that it's a recorded collection contributed by homeless people from about 15 different countries or more around the world. So the song Stand By Me is this addition of a series of singers all contributing to the same song and put together into a coherent whole. So have a listen to that one. Following that, there are two pieces of documentary or news reports that children found on YouTube because they were looking up the theme of friendship and animals. Animals are very significant for young children, and not only for young children. And so these two clips that the primary school children wanted to show for the student planned prayer in the primary school are about Tara the elephant and Bella the dog, and how there was this unusual, enduring, very committed relationship of friendship between an elephant and a dog, unusual friends. Also, it taps into the great sense of loss when the dog dies and the elephant becomes so distressed at the loss of its friend. So you can have a look at that, and I think you can see that the children here are tapping into the great emotion that surrounds friendship for them and how important it is. The final sample of prayer is something that children took from, some of them cut from something, it might have been an advertisement or something from panda.com, and it simply is a series of images. It's all about connectedness. It parallels what's happening in human experience with what's happening in animal experience, showing links between the two. So that wraps up all the material for this experiential part of section four, and you can now move to the lecture and textual material for part two, section four, which is about identifying the issues that have bubbled up already and other issues that educators would need to take into account when it comes to planning the experience of prayer across the whole K-12 curriculum, and also a curriculum for prayer, or what do we need to keep in mind if we're going to be educating children in prayer across the curriculum. What does it mean at all of the different levels? So they're taken up in part two.